Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show exists to help you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with all things Creative Pep Talk by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump into today's episode. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out astropad.com to learn more. This week's episode is also brought to you by Wix.com. With Wix, the web is your playground. Start with a blank page and design your website in any layout you want. Work right on the web page with advanced features and sophisticated visual effects. You'll have the freedom to tell your story the way that you envisioned it. Go to the Wix. I've gotten myself into a mess. Go to wix.com/creativepep to get started today. That's wix.com/creativepep. Wix, what will you create? Quick announcements before we get started. First of all, this week, I will be at Icon Illustration Conference in Detroit. Listen, people, if you're at Icon and you see me and I don't know you, it's impossible for me to come up to you and talk to you. But please feel free to come up and introduce yourself. I love meeting listeners of the podcast. Don't be shy. I'm real nice. I'm a real nice guy, and I like to talk to people. So don't be afraid of my brutish beard and intense face. I don't know. Just don't be afraid. Feel free to come introduce yourself. Also, few notes. I'm not going to be at Creative Works this year. I'm taking a year off. I've done that conference 3 years in a row, and just taking a break and doing some different things. I'm going to be at the AIGA design camp this year instead. And then before that, I will be at Made in the Middle in Kansas City, Tad Carpenter and Carpenter Collective's conference in Kansas City. I will be speaking there. And this month, later this month in July, I'll be speaking in Columbus, Ohio at Making Midwest. So go check that out. I think it's July 21st. So those are all the places you can come, hear me talk and meet me and hang. So go do that. Okay. So today's episode, super special episode. I loved this conversation. There's tons of insight, things that, you know, those things that hit you right when you need to hear them. There was a lot of that going on in this conversation. So today on the show, we have an interview with brilliant Chicago-based art director and designer and letterer, Ade Hoag. Ade has a very impressive client list with the likes of Nike and PayPal. His lettering work is gorgeous and features a clear, obsessive eye for detail. I had an absolute blast, like laughing, crying, geeking out with Ade, and I may have even gained a new friend along the way. I think that I hope that we're running into each other a lot, and I hope to get a drink in person with this guy soon. I think you are going to love this episode, and yeah, without further ado, let's get into it. Here it is. Hey, nice to have you, Ade. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
So I got into your work through Instagram. I don't really remember how it happened, but I fell hard. There's high levels of craft and excellence, and I was way into it. And so I'm glad to have you on the show. Could you just give the Creative Pep Talk listeners a little bit of background about who you are and what you do?
Oh, man. So I am a Chicago-based lettering artist, art director, and designer. I'm originally from North Carolina / Virginia, so those places definitely have my heart and probably a little bit of my voice / accent. It's going away as I stay here a little longer, but
I'm sure when you go back, you slip right into it.
Oh, very much so. Like, a lot of my family members have pretty thick accents, and friends too. And when I call them, like, I can pick them up immediately, like the sound of those, and I easily slip right back into old habits.
And your Chicago friends probably look at you weird, like, "What? What's going on? Yeah. What's that? What is that?"
There's a couple words that I say that people can, like, around here, that just sound too Southern. Like, there's no equivalent for it in Midwest slang.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah, I get it. My wife is British, and so everybody, if like her family or friends will hear her on like a internet video or something, they'll be like, "You have an American accent." And then which no one here thinks that, but as soon as she gets on the phone, I can like barely understand what she's saying. She goes, so she has like a Northern British accent, which is like kind of like the most extreme British accent. So yeah, it's really funny. So the first question that I have for you is, could you tell us about life pre-design for you? Like, you know, childhood, family, just what was going on? You can go back even to where you're a kid. Like, what was life like back then when you think back to it? What was like life growing up for you?
Yeah, so I have probably a slightly more unique background as an artist slash designer. When I was younger, I really had no interest or passion in art. I guess we all probably took some sort of art class in like middle school or elementary school, but by the time I got to high school, I was really focused in a path to become an engineer. My dad was an engineer and had been one for decades, and even when I was in I think it was my senior year of high school and even freshman year of college, I actually worked in his factory. He's like a computer or mechanical engineer. Can't remember which one. But I worked in his factory, like, and I loved that experience. So I had no real desire or no passion for art. And it wasn't until kind of being in college for a while and doing really, really poorly in the engineering realm of my college that I stumbled into some art classes and it kind of snapped or kind of clicked, and I fell in love really quickly.
Right. Yeah. That is, I mean, that's a pretty different story. One thing that comes to mind is in terms of identity, I feel like that's a really bizarre journey. And if I put myself in your shoes, like, I think my whole life I grew up thinking I was just like my mom because she's an artsy one. And my dad's like a businessy dude. And it wasn't until I graduated college and I started getting obsessed with business books and marketing and strategy that I realized that I was way more like my dad than I ever realized. Yeah. And I wonder if when you went to school and you were struggling as an engineer, I'm guessing like your whole life you had kind of assumed that you were just like your dad. Was that a tough pill to swallow where you're like, oh, this isn't coming as naturally to me as I thought?
Yeah, that was really hard for me. It wasn't that my parents like forced me to become something that I didn't want to be. Like, I just thought that was it for me. So it was weird to find out that, I'm not good at physics and I'm not good at these high level Calc 3 classes, you know? So that was really difficult for me. And it was also a shift in who I was identity wise even before. This is super weird, but a lot of people don't know this, especially people who just like know me or follow my work.
This is good stuff. So everything you're saying about this is super weird and a lot of people don't know that, both of those things are indicators that I'm leaning in and I'm interested. Like, this is good tape. But yeah, so keep going. Sorry to interrupt.
My first name is Broderick, and I went by Broderick my entire life. And it wasn't until I got to college and this weird little identity crisis for switching my major from engineering to art, where I changed my middle name is Ade, and I just started going by Ade like midway-ish through college. It was sort of freshman year, but I tried to push it more and more as I was in the middle of college. It didn't really take. It wasn't until I moved to Chicago where I could, because I started kind of anew here. So starting here and being able to completely introduce myself as Ade. So it even goes to show, like, it wasn't just the major, but I feel like my whole personality had to like take a new, I was like, oh, like, this is not who I am anymore. I'm not even that. I don't want to be that. I want to be something new, something different. So I kind of changed it up a little.
Man, that is so fascinating. It's like, very much like the start of a whole different journey and adventure and kind of a search for a whole, I don't know, new answers or more a losing of oneself and a journey to find oneself. Like, that is extremely fascinating. I wish that I can't see, mine's way more lame. I changed my last name from Miller to Pizza. Does not have the same effect. It sounds way dumber, but all right. You have a better, more epic version. So when you were in college, like, and you were, I'm guessing there was a season of turmoil while you're kind of trying to figure out that transition. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it was, the turmoil was mainly just because of my grades. You know, you get into a really bad position in terms of academic standing, and you have to figure out how you get out of this. So there's a weird in between kind of semester in there, which I was like kind of just taking whatever classes that I could think of and could find. And I just, like I said, I kind of stumbled into the art realm and started to like it. I was bad at it, but I thought, oh, this could be cool. And it led to a unique path for me.
And so just, I'm going to just like tap the brakes a little bit, because I want to dive into the I always feel sinister when I do this, when I'm like, let's stop and talk about the bad parts in more detail. But I just feel like it just helps people to relate to, you know, everybody's got the harder parts. And like, when you were in school and you're starting to get bad grades in physics, and your identity is kind of changing your mind, you're questioning kind of the path that you thought you were going to be on. What were the ideas with the negative emotions? Like, do you have an example of a story of like failing a test and what you were feeling and how, what you thought your parents were going to feel or anything like that? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Spoiler, I failed a lot of tests, so I don't even know if I could put my name. Those were a blur. There's definitely a point. So this is really kind of funny. My mom, I was in a print magazine spread as like a new visual artist. And they asked like about my path, and I talked about how I began this career of design and art. And I said that after essentially failing engineering school, and my mom, like, I think she called me and was like, I didn't know you failed engineering school. And it was this weird, like, yeah. I think I showed you guys everything that was happening, but I got it before it got too bad, before they told me I couldn't come anymore. But so after, I think it was after the first full year, I told my parents I really didn't want to do it anymore. And they kind of just told me to stick it out. Their parents have always been supportive, but they kind of wanted me to make sure I just wasn't quitting just to quit. Like, make sure that's something you don't want to do. And so I stayed around for a little bit longer, and I realized, I saw the writing on the wall, and I started making bad grades again. And by the end of that, I think that third semester, I think I just stopped going to one of the classes. Like, I didn't even take the midterm or the final, because I was like, this is pointless. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to make a bad grade. This is not for me. But yeah, those emotions get a little heavy in there, because I didn't know what I wanted to do or what I wanted to be. And I felt like I was like kind of wasting away, you know. People talk about quarter life crises, and I always joke and said, I think I've had like at least three or four of them.
Yeah. So when you're having those, feelings, like, what, before you had a new path emerge, what were the feelings? What were the thoughts?
It was that I wasn't ever really going to be anything. And I guess sometimes that still kind of scares me. You know, you look at wherever your career is right now, you're like, oh man, maybe I'll never make it. Maybe, what is the end goal here? What, like, all these kind of questions pop in your head. And at that time, they were like the most dire, because I didn't see a future. I didn't know where I was going to be or what kind of major I would have, and how I was going to get there. So, at that time, it was a weird time for me. I had to just kind of struggle through it. Take some classes and just have a little fun. I kind of went back to the college experience, right? Just have fun, make friends, take some classes, see what's out there that you love. And then you can find what you love sooner or later and, stick to it. Like, yeah. Path towards that.
Can you tell me the story of how the design path emerged and how that kind of called you onto a different path?
Yeah. It was weird. I took some classes, some art classes and random classes in general, but kind of stumbled into drawing early in the design program at my school. And in the midst of this, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to really do. And somewhere along the way, I decided I wanted to design clothes, be a fashion designer. So I started like sketching clothes, like things. It was like all men's apparel, and it was really nothing. It was like t-shirts and just like design pieces, no like crazy cool garments, right. Just people design on it. And then I remember very vividly like trying to design a logo. I went out and bought like a Mac because I was like, yo, like in order to be creative, you have to have an iMac, right? So I did it. I went out and like spent a lot of
money. You bought the story.
I didn't actually earn it, but I started designing a logo, and I realized in that process that designing the logo was a hell of a lot of fun for me. So I started looking more into like a graphic design background and career path, and it seemed super interesting in the art realm, and that immediately led me to start taking graphic design classes and declare a major in graphic design.
Can you remember what the catalyst was to start doing the fashion drawings?
To this day, I like clothes, but back then I used to wear like a lot of really graphic, not graphic in the sense of like disturbing, but like graphic.
You wore a lot of like shirts with mutilated bodies on them and stuff
worn parental advisory shirts.
Yeah. What were the brands? What was doing it for you?
It was Echo. Was my main, like I used to wear Echo clothes, like ECKO.
Yeah,
it was my job. I used to have like matching shirts and jeans, that like, pattern would go from one to the other. It was a little over the top. I probably went. I'm kind of those are behind me.
I felt like they were pretty cool back in the day. I remember like in high school thinking they were really cool, and they had like, I mean, maybe mine was like partially influenced by my nerddom, but they had like a collaboration with X-Men, I think.
Okay.
Which was like a special series that had like Marvel characters. Trust me, I know you think I don't know what I'm talking about because I didn't wear it, but I remember seeing these pants, and they didn't have much going on, but they did have like a Wolverine thing. I'm gonna send you a link so you know that I know what I'm talking about.
I might pick one up just for all time's sake.
Yeah. Right. So you would always been into that since you were, you know, even younger, and what made you think I'll start designing my own?
I don't know. I think it was just that I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. Right. This seems like fun. I like wearing clothes. Clothes can make you money. Here you go. Let's try it.
There was some kind of self-reflection of like, I seem to be interested in this. Right. Like this is a thing that's different about me than other people.
Yes. Yes.
Right. That makes sense. And so you went to go make a logo. And then after that, you were like, man, you're just following the excitement and the passion and the natural inclination. So that you did the logo and then you thought, I better take a design class. Is that right?
I mean, to the early parts of our design curriculum, which then after that, that's when I was immediately hooked. Like, I mean, after taking the drawing class, I was really starting to like it. And then after like getting more to the design realm of our curriculum, that's when I really had fun.
Mm, yeah. So then when you were in that time and you're like in the early days, were there people that helped you along?
I mean, of course, like professors and things like that helped me figure them out. I still have a really, really good relationship with a lot of my professors. There's a couple from my school that were art teachers, and I still go see, like when I come back to Charlotte, which is where I went to school, I'll always go visit them or try to like sneak in their classes in the middle of the day. And then a couple of my design professors, I still, like every time I go back, I talk to them. So yeah, they were super supportive. They were hard on me. I was a bit of a lazy student in a lot of aspects. So it was definitely a push that I need. I'm sure they didn't necessarily love me when I was in their class, but it was a lot to me that they, like, when I come back to town, like I go to dinner with my professors, like we'll go out and have food. So like that means a lot to me. Like, I guess I wasn't that bad, you know?
Right. Well, it seems like, I mean, that now, what changed about, I mean, maybe nothing changed, but it seems like you've got a lot of fire and ambition. Was that not present then?
No, I think the problem was it was just as present, but I I guess I saw it in a very real world view of things, right? So
I do the same thing. I know what you're saying.
It's like school. It was school. I know that school is school, and I need
the stakes to, feel low.
Yeah, I gotta. Okay, yeah, I gotta do this assignment. But hey, of a freelance, if somebody wants to do some freelance work, and are they going to pay me money for it? Yo, I should go make that money. And school, like, I'll make a B or a C on the assignment. I'll turn in a little late if like that's the price for me doing something that's real in the real world. So
it's
I guess
like
I just
scrimmage and not the game. And you're like, yeah, this doesn't really count. Yeah, I always felt that way.
I could be playing somewhere else. I could be playing this other league. So I went to play in this other league. So I think that sometimes that got me in trouble. It's an interesting dynamic. It's weird now because I it's funny because I teach a class at like an undergraduate class, and it's weird to teach something and like, oh, I get it. Grades don't really matter that much as long as you take the lesson out of the like what are your teachers trying to teach you. And I picked those up. I know what they were trying to teach me, and I know what they taught me. I have a solid understanding of design and the creative process. But I didn't necessarily want to do every homework piece. It's one of my one of my professors, his name is Bobby. Taught communication design, so I had him like our design program was small. There's like 10 to 12 students in there for the most part, in my graduating class, I should say. So in one of our classes, we had multiple with them, but one of our late level design classes, our assignment was to rebrand do a package design, a rebrand of whatever company. So I chose a beer company. I redid the logo. I like spent this process of me like developing the logo, and I designed the bottles and the carrier they were in. And because I was into printmaking at the time too in college, we screen printed the graphics on everything. And then we were supposed to have an advertisement, like a little 1-page 8x10 advertisement. And I just didn't do the advertisement. Like I got a zero on the advertisement. And I'm like, that's the rest of the project. And I was like, I just don't like doing this ad thing. I just didn't do it. And to this day, he still gives me crap about it. He's like, yeah, that ad you never turned in. I was like, look, Bobby, one day I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to design this thing and I'm going to do it.
Knock it out of the park. Yeah.
In me. I just didn't want to do it. It wasn't important to me. So the passion is still there. It's like it was very siloed at times, I think.
Yeah. Do you think, because I mean, I'm guessing everybody that goes through school doesn't end up where you are now. Do you think that, and even the early jobs you had, like, do you think there was anything in your school experience, either something professors passed on to you or something you picked up or whatever, like, what did you gain in that season of your life that ended up contributing to where you are now?
Oh, yeah.
Did you learn any lessons, any, I don't know, takeaways? Like,
yeah, for sure. I was back at my school, my alma mater, earlier this year, and I received like an award from the College of Arts and Architecture for alumni. And it was funny. I talked about one of my professors and one like the very specific things that he said in class all the time, and I said it to the crowd. And it's just there's very specific tiny little things that I remember verbatim. But I think the thing that I really learned was to appreciate the process, especially when it comes to creating things. It don't always happen fast, and it doesn't happen the same. You kind of just have to roll with it. And then just like appreciating good design work. I think the most important step is understanding what looks good and why it looks good, not necessarily being able to create it. If you know what looks good and why it looks good, then sooner or later you can like build a path to create that yourself.
Yeah. So like, so was the thing that you shared was to enjoy the process. Mm-hmm. That was the thing. And so what does that look like? Is that a thing you think about actively when you're even working on client stuff, or like, is this something that you remind yourself of now?
I don't think that I actively remind myself of it. I think that I genuinely do have fun with the process.
You just have internalized it, and it's just something you do.
Yeah, and I talk to people all the time about it, and it's like even when I'm doing something, I'd be doing a cool project or a cool shoot, and the whole time, like I love Insta stories, Instagram stories. I'm like, I always like make sure to take time to like share little previews of it or share little snaps of whatever it is that I'm doing, and I think that is me truly enjoying the process, and I like sharing my and every time that I fuck up and like all of that stuff, I make sure that everyone sees it. And I think that is enjoying the process.
Yes, that is so good. And actually, this is something that's been on my mind a lot lately, that one of the things that's been holding me back as I get busier is not allowing myself to take the time, which is what you just said. And it's sounds maybe it sounds obvious to some people, but I realized recently that my work was suffering because I just wasn't not just taking the time. Like I was taking the time to do one execution well, you know, like the bare minimum time. Not, and I think, you know, I think that something at the core of creativity is like the novelty of like, I'm going to spend extra time doing something for, you know, the delight of it. You know, it's almost creativity in a way, kind of at base nature feels frivolous to humanity because you can't eat it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't give you shelter. And I think because of that, sometimes the world we live in wants to rush everything, and it makes it impossible to get your best creative work or enjoy it. Is that, you know what I mean?
Especially as a freelancer, I feel like every assignment I get, every time somebody reaches out to me to do something, it is last minute. It's like, they're like, oh, we need this in a week. And you're like, you know, you realize that this whole process would take me a week. And that's like my all your approvals. And so, yeah, sometimes you get the process gets chopped down because of things that you can't control. But even in a small way, I think you still have to enjoy it. And there's still the ability to enjoy it. Even when we're stressed on a deadline, it's like still shooting those behind the scenes or taking a step back to actually appreciate whatever it is that you created and those mistakes and every failure that you came upon in your process of getting there.
Yeah. And so recently for me, it looked like I was just talking to my friend about it. And like, I was stressing out about, you know, certain elements of the podcast when I'm doing my monologue episodes. Like there'll be elements of the episode, maybe a 5-minute segment that has some punchy thing that I'm like, I want it to be right. I want it to feel, you know, off the cuff, but also and really heartfelt, but also like have the power of something planned. And he was just like, well, what you got to do is just do like 7 takes and know that you're going to do 7 takes so that you can just have a good time and not worry about getting it right. And I think there's a lesson in there too to what you're saying of like, this is why you need to fight for good payment, because you got to be able to, you know, you got to say, look, like maybe the final execution takes me 7 hours, but to get to that one, it's going to take me 72 hours or whatever.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of mistakes that happen along the way. And yes, building in time to be able to make those mistakes on purpose to figure out, because you don't know what the hell you're doing. And I get hired for projects sometimes. I'm like, I don't really know how I'm going to make something happen out of whatever. So let me figure out, give myself some time to see if I can make some mistakes.
Yeah, man, that's good. I need that advice, dude. That's good. So let me ask you this: on this path, after school? Mm-hmm. What are the big obstacles that you have faced? What are your like darkest moments of like where you're like, man, I want to give up or I hate this or whatever? Like, what are the things that really have been trials for you, if there have been any?
I mean, there's been some trials in terms of like work life. I worked at 2 different agencies and some contract stuff in between, and they just never were right for me. So I definitely had some of those moments where like, this is too much. I'm in meetings too often. I'm doing this too much. I'm not designing enough. But more recently, it's just been like the process of being a freelancer. And I mean, there is a really, I was in one of my roughest places last summer in terms of like just dealing with depression and not feeling like, I did not fully understand like how serious depression can be. And like, you just can't, like sometimes can't move, can't do anything. Yeah, there's nothing that makes you want to get out of bed or do anything. Luckily for me, I'm a runner and I stay pretty active in terms of fitness. I was signed up for a couple of marathons last year, and I don't know without having to do those, like having to get up and train, because I knew I would hate myself if I didn't. I wouldn't be able to do it. Like, that's what kind of got me out of bed and it kept that process going. But there were some dark times in there when your bank account's at zeros and, you know, you're just trying to make money and everybody thinks that you're crushing it. I mean, it was weird for me because I had this moment in which I was inside of a magazine that said that I was one of the 15 new visual artists under 30. And it's like, everyone sees that. And it's like, oh my God, you're amazing. You're doing such great things. And like, my bank account is like at zero. I'm like, you guys don't understand. Like, really hard. I'm the definition of a starving artist right now. And so that took some time to, of course, get past that. So,
and actually, anybody that listens to this podcast knows that the first, I've been doing this, I graduated in 2008. So I've been on this journey for about 10 years. The first 3 years were extremely brutal. Mm-hmm. I had tons of moments, just like you're talking about, you know, over withdrawn, you know, getting, I had so much audacity. The first year I had like a bunch of jobs coming in, and then we got married, had a baby, got a mortgage, quit my job, went freelance. And then that was like when the recession hit. Mm-hmm. And I had like bill collectors calling me, and there were times where I'm like laying face down on the living room floor, which all the creative pep talk people are like, all right, Andy, quit talking about that. We know it was painful. We're feeling your pain because you talk about it so much. But I'm just telling you for solidarity, man. Like, freaking get it. And when you're in that moment, that sucks.
It feels like there's no way out. And like, you're just like, there's nothing you can do to change your situation. It's like you've worked hard for nothing up to that point. So yeah, it was rough.
Yes. And so when you're in those moments, what are the voices in your head saying? Like, what is the battle?
Oh, it was for
me. I know. By the way, sorry. No, I was just going to say, I know some of these questions are like not normal conversation. Yeah. And so sometimes I feel like that's a weird question to ask somebody if like we were hanging out for beers. But what I found is like, the more particular we can get, like, and just, you know, sharing what that experience is like, I feel like it's so cathartic for other people to feel it.
I mean,
and understand what that journey is like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For me, the voices were like telling me, yo, go get a job. You can't do this. You'll never survive at this. This is like too hard for you. And it took a long time for me to tell myself I was tough enough for it. I am also the person who, a lot of people love the idea of freelancing and working for themselves. I am not necessarily that person. While I do really enjoy freelancing, I do really enjoy freelancing. And I'm also not sure if I can ever really go back to a full-time, like, everyday job. I still...
It makes you almost unemployable when you do it too long, I feel like.
I've never really been the person that said like, oh, freelancing is what I want to do the rest of my life. I just at the time had to figure out how I could better advance my career and start spending more time with letters and drawing letters, and freelancing just seemed to be the best avenue. So at the time when I was like struggling with it, it was like, yo, just go get a job. Maybe this is not for you. So it was like me recommitting to, oh, I'm going to stick this out and like, let's see what happens. Let's see if it continues to be fun. The moment it's no longer fun, for sure, then I'll go back to a real full-time job. But as long as I'm having fun and I'm doing okay and I can at least afford my own apartment, then I'll continue doing this.
Quick shout out to the sponsors. That was a high note when I came in there with quick shout out. To AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a graphics tablet, meaning a screen that you can draw on. It's connected to your computer so that you can draw in your favorite pro stuff, whatever. You know, pro stuff, Photoshop, Illustrator, all that jazz. It's my favorite solution for drawing in these apps that I've ever used, and that's why I reached out to them to be a sponsor for the podcast. I use them every week. It means that I can take my studio in my backpack and work anywhere in the world. And as I'm doing a lot more traveling these days, that's really important. So if you want 10% off the pro version of AstroPad, go to astropad.com slash try, T-R-Y, and use the promo code PIZZA in all caps, P-I-Z-Z-A, for Dr. Pizza. Or it's just a... anyway, go do that if you want to get into that. Okay, also, we have Wix, Wix.com. Another lovely sponsor. I've been working with Wix on some projects, and I love these people. I love their heart. I love what they're doing. They pivoted a few years ago. You know, they used to do Super Bowl commercials, and they used to be kind of the quick, easy, simple solution for everyone to have a website. And I think they found that a sweet spot in helping creative people not just do a simple, easy website, although it is still easy to use, but to make something that was really versatile and flexible so that you could do something that looked completely different on the web while not needing to know code. So I love Wix. They're doing awesome things in our space. Go to wix.com/creativepep to get started today. That's wix.com/creativepep. Thanks, Wix. Did that timing of everything sour the experience of being in that in the top 15? I don't remember exactly what was it was the print magazine thing, right?
Yeah, it really did. It was weird to have people think that you're just the shit and you don't feel like it at all, and it's not even in your head. It's everything is telling you, yo, you don't have this. You're not doing it. You're not making money, so clearly you're not doing a good job at this. So that was
I'm sure I had those moments of feeling like an imposter, like, oh, you know, I have a great client, but also,
yes,
you know, the gas man's calling me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so how did you, you know, what, like, because, you know, things that does to you, that experience. When you're at that place and you decide to stick it out, what are the things that you do to stay motivated and also to change your circumstance? How did you get from there to here?
Yeah, I think at that time I was still experimenting this whole like creating type out of real things, like this tactile type thing. And I just started more of those, and I started doing more just for fun. Because at the time I wasn't doing a lot of client work. So I was like, well, if I'm not going to get paid for doing nothing, I might as well not get paid for doing something I love. So I might as well just create some fun pieces and have a little, like, make this more enjoyable for myself, to go down swinging, right? Like if I fail at this, at least I fail, giving it my all and trying something cool. And so I think that, like, because I did more and more of that, then it started leading to more, slightly more opportunities and chances to do stuff, which felt super rewarding. It's those personal projects that lead to the cool client stuff.
So, one other question about that: when you're feeling like crap and feeling like wanting to give up, how do you go from that feeling to? I remember being in that exact spot and thinking, probably what I should do is make work anyway. But the gap between feeling like you suck and or whatever, like it's not working or you're failing or whatever, the gap between that and making creative work, which, you know, has to come from passion and motivation or something, you know, how do you bridge that gap? Were there people in your life you were talking to? Were there, you know, resources? Like, did you just give yourself a pep talk? What things got you from point A to point B?
Yeah, definitely people I talk to and friends and people that are close to me that you could, like, let everything go. But also I don't do a lot of it anymore, but I used to blog, like write on my personal journal on my website a fair amount. I would even write blog posts out. I have like dozens of them that I never actually posted or went live. But I would just write things out, and spend some time with yourself, and if you need to cry, cry. It's okay. It's like, it's whatever. But a big part of that was I began to start meditating a little bit and like practice. What's it called? I'm blanking right now. It's not like a self. I can't even remember. Whatever. But I started using this app called Headspace.
Is it mindfulness?
Mindfulness. Sorry, I don't know why I was blanking. Wasn't being very mindful. But
get in the moment.
The thing that mindfulness kind of helped instill with me is to like enjoy whatever it is happening right now. Like some things you can't control. There's some things that are just out of your power. You know, you can hound people all day to get your payment or whatever. But if they say it's in the mail and you email them 10 times, like maybe you just have to trust that that check shows up that next day. And you can't stress about it today. You can't let that ruin your day today. You can only hope that it makes tomorrow better. Like if that check does come or whatever, that new project does come or that phone call does come, that you whatever it was that you needed. So those things really helped me. And then, like I said, the running of the marathons too were good because that made me get out of bed every day. And I'm kind of big on routine. So it just helped me to have a very steady routine. You know, get up, go run, and then go to your office and sit there. And even when you're there at your office and you don't have anything to do, you'll find something to do. You'll find something worthwhile at least. So.
Yeah, that's really good. I think both of those tips for people that are starting out and trying to make it get some momentum, like having routines that get you jazzed, like exercise that gives those endorphins pumping, and then also having a set apart space for making and forcing yourself to spend some time in that space. Like those are both things that are ingredients.
With sleep, which is not going to help you do anything. It's not going to help you get anywhere. So you have to just get up and be present, be there. Cause I mean, everyone, it's a quote, like 90% of whatever is just showing up, right? You just got to be there. Like just go to your
office
and try to make something. Cause after, if you sit there in your office for 2-3 hours, you're going to get bored enough that you want to create something.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to channel my, NPR Terry Gross,
okay, here you go.
Interviewer and just circle back to you saying, you know, if you need to cry, cry. And I've been basically an open book about, my serious ups and downs. And I don't mean to I don't mean to out you as a crier, but one of the things I'd say all the time, you know, I said this last week on the show is like, for me, this journey has had real bumps and bruises, real tears. There have been times, you know, where things didn't go right, like a project that I needed to come in didn't come in, or, you know, whatever, it, you know, and this is my life, real stuff. And there have been at least a handful of times where I had real cry sessions.
Yeah.
Where, like, have you had real blood, sweat, and tears on this journey?
Oh yeah, it still happened. I mean, literally less than a week ago, it was like nothing even significant or severe. I was just like not feeling right about something in terms of life a little bit and like my career. And like I said, I run a fair amount, so I ran over to the lakefront here in Chicago, and I just like sat there for like 15 minutes. I started tearing up, and I really didn't have any idea. Really any concrete idea what I was tearing up about. And I was like, this just feels weird, but it feels good. I'm glad I did it. And I ran home and I showered and I went to bed, and I woke up the next day feeling like much better about my situation. So, it was like nothing.
What'd you say?
It was nothing I can control. Like whatever was happening that particular day. So it's like, go ahead, go like do the thing that you like to do, which is to run, spend a little time with yourself, because sometimes it's hard to do that. Just whatever emotions that you kind of have, let them out. You have it. It's all right.
Yes. And I think, first of all, thanks for sharing that. And second of all, you know, I think in contrast, the way I like to think about it is like, you know, there's like the numb boredom frustration of living a life that isn't really in your heart, you know, and that I would trade the frustrated, knocked down tears.
Yeah.
I would take those over the numb boredom of trying to live a life that's not mine any day of the week.
Like it feels good to be in control of whatever it is that you're doing. Whether that doesn't necessarily mean just because you're self-employed, you are in control, or doesn't mean because you are employed that you're not in control.
Yeah.
You can be in control of whatever at any stage of it, but like feeling like you're in control of whatever you're doing and you're on the path that you want to be on. Feels amazing. It doesn't matter if you cry every day along the way. But if it feels like you're moving towards the right thing, then it's worth it.
Exactly. Like, I feel like, you know, the tiers to me, I always just feel like, well, at least there's like stakes.
Yeah.
Like what I'm doing, you know, there's something to lose and I'm fighting and I'm, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it was a post I did on Instagram a long time ago, or not a long time ago, last year sometime. And it just said like self-care. And I ripped that page out and it's like, it's on the wall by my desk. There's a couple others. And like, you will see it if like you ever watch my Instagram stories. And like, I share a photo of my desk. Like, there's like four little pieces of paper right there. One says like self-care. One says, I think there's some things you can't change. And like another one says like, it's okay. And it's like these little reminders that I would just write for myself. But now I just like stick them up and put them there. So like, I'm always looking at them. And I always got to remember that, like, yo, you got to take care of yourself. If you're going to take care of any client, you got to make sure you feel good before you can do any kind of work that's cool or creative or meaningful. No.
Yeah, completely. That's great. So I want to switch gears a little bit. Talk about
therapy right there for a second.
What did you say?
Good. This is like, that was like therapy for a second. That was good. It was a good little point. You know, I got to come out of that.
Hey. Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit and get a little safe zone out of that little valley. But you know, it's not good tape without a little bit of that, emotion happening. It feels like you're going on this journey. You get a job, you're doing all this stuff, and it seems like lettering is kind of like a sword in the stone moment, if you will. I use a lot of like hero's journey fantasy lingo on this podcast. So, so just roll with it. But it seems like lettering was a bit of like this is where things maybe take a transcendent level up. Is that true?
Yeah. I stumbled into this kind of path of lettering and just was trying to figure out something cool and fun, because at the time I was just like not super inspired by my like day-to-day job duties. So it was just like an added thing to do. And then I remember just like when you are in the early stages of this, and still to this day, is when I was doing it, I kind of just lost track of time. I could just spend however long I needed to do it. And I can experiment as many times as possible. And I could go through 1,000 pieces of tracing paper, and it still just felt right. Like, I was like, oh, this is still fun. This at no point gets frustrating to me. So it was that definitely the moment.
Man,
I pulled out that sword and stone, ready to take everyone down. Lead a new generation.
Yes. That's amazing. And that's amazing, because one of the things I think about a lot was that the big signpost for me that said I'm on the right path, I think a lot of people think the sword in the stone moment, or the angel singing will be the voices of the praise of others saying like, you're a prodigy, you're incredible. But I always say like, a better sign isn't the quantity of good feedback, mm-hmm. or it's not the quality of feedback, it's the quantity of effort that you're willing to give. Like, that's the bigger sign.
Yeah.
And you just described it. It's like, can you just like spend insane amounts of time on this happily? Because if you're doing that, you're gonna get good.
Yeah.
And that's the best indicator.
Yeah, and it's just gonna take some time. You have to continue to work at it, to develop it, of course, to make yourself better at it. But yeah, it's the moment when you realize that like, time doesn't matter. All right, going to this place to a friend doesn't matter. I'd rather be doing what I'm doing now. I'd rather be working, which is weird. Or you work a full-time job and you work for 8, 10, 12 hours and you still want to come home and do something else, like to do whatever it is that you're passionate about, that you love.
Yes, that's totally true. And let me ask you this question. This is kind of an esoteric question, but I'm going to see if we can get somewhere. What do you think is, and it's just your opinion, what is good lettering to you? And I can elaborate on that question if you need me to, but you feel free to just dive in.
I think that good lettering is just technically sound. I it's funny because I have to I teach lettering to undergrad, so being able to explain about or talk about lettering and at a high level is important. But for me, it's just understanding what makes each letter that letter, right? The reason why sometimes you look at something and it doesn't feel right, it's just because someone's broken whatever it is that makes that letter that letter. So I think good lettering sticks to whatever makes it correct, but also feels appropriate for whatever its use is. So, you know, if you're doing something that's about, you're doing something about humanity and you use something that feels like it was done by Germans in World War II, like those two things don't connect. It's a fine inspirational pieces that lend themselves to whatever it is that you're creating. So I think those two things, make sure it's correct, making sure that it feels right for the right purpose.
Yeah, it's correct and appropriate. And so now I think it's like early part of the journey, aesthetically, you get like really wrapped up in speaking correctly, so to speak, whether you're doing lettering or, mm-hmm. you know, editorial illustration or whatever, you get very, you know, entrenched, and it's good to get into like speaking correctly, so to speak. But I think it seems like a lot of artists transition from that to having something to say. So it's not just about the technical speaking, but it's also about, you know, what are you going to say with it? And it seems like you're hitting a stride right now where what you're saying is as important as how you say it. Is that true?
Yeah, I would agree. Making sure that the correct things are correct when necessary.
But do you feel like there's a message behind your stuff now? Like to me, it seems like if I'm like looking back in your, feed and your progression and everything, it seems like there was a season where you were really, you know, your early personal project was about technique. Yeah. Whereas like the last 6 months or whatever, it seems the focus is less on speaking correctly and more on having something to say, like a message.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer of using, we all should use our platform for the best possible reasons and use it in positive ways. So it doesn't matter how big your platform is. It doesn't matter how far your reach extends or how big your audience is. It doesn't matter if it's 100,000 people or just 100 people. You can still like inspire others and affect change just through having a voice and yes. about things that you're passionate about. So, I mean, I do posts that are culturally relevant and, you know, with police shootings and whatever, like about who I am as a Black person living in America. Like, I want to be able to share those experiences too. So I share mine through lettering. It's like an extra part of who I am, what I do.
And I think it's like, it's really, that's one of the things that is so powerful about lettering is that you can elevate a message and grab attention and you know, put emotion into the letters. And, you know, I think it's obviously like a really valuable tool. Have you felt powerful in your ability to get messages out there in a way that non-letterers can, you know what I mean? Like people that are, you know, you have a different kind of skill set. Have you felt the power of using it? Yeah. Does that make sense?
For sure. It's like I love when I create something, especially when it's like culturally relevant and something like maybe it's something in the news or whatever it is. And I have lots of people share and comment on it. Like that's when I'm like, oh, this resonates with more people than just myself. Right. Like I'm actually saying something good that other people, maybe some people are afraid to say it. Or can't say it in a way that's effective, but like I'm giving other people the chance to know that what I'm saying and what I believe, and then if they care to extend that message, then sometimes they do. Sometimes they share. Sometimes they create their own pieces. Sometimes they find other ways to say something similar. So that's always a good feeling. That's when you understand the power of like whatever it is that we're creating.
And it's really interesting too for me. The more I've seen the power of my personal work, the more confident I am in charging what I'm worth to brands. Cause I'm like, look, I know that because I can make images that are attention grabbing online and that they can have more reach than a text post or whatever. I'm like, you need to pay for this because this is a valuable commodity that you need. And without me, or without people like me, you know, your message isn't going to be heard.
Yeah. It's definitely more dull if not given to me to be able to say it.
Yes. And so you were mentioning that, so, you know, we kind of talked about what makes good lettering, which is kind of about learning to fit into what it means to be a pro letterer. What do you think it is about your work that stands out, that's different, that's, you know, what, how, you know, you've got all the technique of a good letterer and you fit in that way, but how do you stand out from the rest of the lettering crowd?
Oh man, I sometimes don't know. It's something I think I still struggle with. I feel like there are times in which I don't know my own creative voice. I'm like, yo, what is my creative style? What am I doing that sets me apart from everyone else? But I definitely know a part of it is the photographic part of what I'm doing a lot lately. There's a kind of a seismic shift in my work over the last like year, and I've gone from what I refer to as designing JPEGs to like designing real things. So for a long time, when I was lettering something or doing whatever, any kind of design work, I would just do it. And like what I would share on Instagram or on my website was just like an image, like an exported JPEG from a design program. And I've gotten to the point where now it's like, I want to create something physical. I want to design something. And no matter how cool it is, I will make it into something and then share whatever that something is. So like seeing something real, something tangible. And I do a lot of that through photography too. Photography is something I kind of picked up for not too long ago when I was at an agency, just doing more photo-based projects. But that led to me like doing the large scale top-down pieces out of flowers or out of whatever. It was a way to like create something physical. Yes, I could have designed something very similar on a design program, but like to make something tangible and to photograph it and to edit it was a big part of like who I think I am now.
Yes. And actually, I think that's something I encourage a lot of students or people that I work with to do is like apply your stuff, because it's anybody with a pirated version of Photoshop or Illustrator can export a JPEG or a PNG or whatever and upload it onto Instagram. But if you can apply it to real world situations and make it look good, you're going to, you know, that barrier to entry is a lot higher and it requires real craftsmanship and eye for design. And I think that it probably allows you to, it probably allows companies to see the application of your work really easily.
Mm-hmm. And those images have, to me, a much even greater impact. They're much more visually stunning, generally speaking. And more attention grabbing, and people understand the amount of time it took to create it. Sometimes with the digital stuff, it doesn't always come across. It's like, oh, this person spent forever doing this, even though like as an artist, I know that they did. But it's like those big things where they're tangible, like, oh, yo, this must have took forever. And like now they understand it when they see it.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I think that one of the things I tell people is like, it's not just aesthetically how you stand out. The content of, you know, your message and your perspective in the world, you know, like what you choose to do your personal work about content wise is as important to standing out as anything else. You know, I spent a lot of time and still do a lot of work about dreams, and I do a lot of work about going on journeys, like a lot, that's like, these are themes in my work. And that when art directors think of me, they'll throw me, like, I just got another project about dreams. I've had several, but because it's something that I'm, you know, talking about a lot. And I feel like you have a lot of messages in your lettering that aren't in everybody else's.
Mm-hmm. At least I would hope so.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Last thing, last question is, how does where you are now relate back to, this is a weird question. All right. So you might be like, yeah, I don't know what that means. So be prepared for that. But how does what you're doing now in your life as a designer, as a letterer, as a creative person, relate back to your childhood or your family, or, you know, your place in your family, your place into relationship to what you used to call home. Like, how do they see you now? Do you feel like, does that question mean anything to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they probably see me as, it's weird, even though I didn't necessarily have this background as a creative, as I was growing up, they probably see that, like, yo, you were actually made for this whole time. Like, you were always a little extra. You were probably always a little out there, outgoing. Yeah. Like, one to be forward facing. Like, I like being in the middle of a crowd. Like, when we're dancing, I like to be in the middle of it in the bar. Right? I want to be like at front and center. So I think, like, now it just, like, this path illuminated everything. It gave you, like, a way to that person. And I think the previous path probably didn't. And it just allows me to, like, have a personality and have a lot more fun. So I think that family and friends probably see that now. It probably took them a while. Like, they're like, oh, this, you know, I'm now starting to remember things, like what he was doing when he was a kid. And now it kind of makes sense. It just wasn't the path that they probably thought it would be at the very beginning.
Like, the dots are connecting in reverse of like, oh yeah, now all this stuff makes sense.
My mom.
And the other the follow up. Go ahead.
My mom has a very, like, specific example that she would always tell me. It's like, when I was a kid, I, like, I refused to eat out of a cereal bowl and a spoon that didn't match. Like, mine were like comic books or cereal based bowls, right? Like, with the characters in it. Like, if the character on my spoon didn't match the character on my bowl, I, like, lost my mind. Or if my mom tried to make me wear, like, a denim jeans and the two denims weren't the same, like, I just could not handle it. I think, like, that even that was a part of, like, now who I am, what I've become. Like, oh, I've actually had a taste at that time, and I, like, knew what went together, and I, like, was picky, and if I didn't get my way, then I just, like, wasn't having it. And I still think that to this day.
The obsessive, opinionated designer runs deep. That's hilarious. And this is my follow-up to that, which is, do you ever think about how the engineering path or part of you, even if it's not the whole you, how that impacts or makes you different as a designer?
Yeah, I think that the engineering part of me definitely had, like, a big part of the technical side of whatever it is that I do. So whether that's, like, in the photography realm with, like, composing a photo and, like, making sure all my settings and camera and lighting and all that kind of stuff set up. But a big part of that is in the digitization of type. And, like, with the Bezier process, I'm, like, kind of annoying with it. Where, like, all of my Bezier anchor handles handles and anchor points are, like, at 90 degrees and 0 degrees. Like, I'm, like, really weirdly obsessive about things like that. And I just think it's because of my, like, technical nature of being in engineering school. And, like, when I was in high school taking drafting classes and, like, understanding the technical process. And it just now lends to my work a little bit. And I even see it in my lettering style. I've talked about it a lot lately just because I have another friend. His name is Kyle Latender. He's an amazing lettering artist here in Chicago. He's really good at expressive typography. He teaches it at a school here, and he just did, like, a workshop on it and made a zine for it. And he gave me one of the copies of the zine, and, like, it has a lot of tips about how to make lettering more expressive. And I just, like, I cannot physically wrap my brain around doing something that's not, like, rigid and, like, all of my lettering, look at them, they almost always go, like, up to the right, and, like, everything's, like, a perfect slant, and everything's, like, on a very even baseline. And, like, in his zine, he talks about, like, adjusting the baseline, like, having a rolling baseline where some letters are below and some are above to give it a little more character. And I tried it in a piece recently, and I just couldn't do it. Like, my brain just doesn't work that way. I'm trying to get better at it. That's, like, the next step I'm trying to push towards. But it's like that rigid sense of being an engineer, like, yo, this is the way it should be, right? Like, script is supposed to be at, like, a slight angle, and a lot of times shifted upwards, and so I'm working to break past that a little bit sooner or later.
Yeah, that's hilarious. And I think about I tell people, you know, think about where you have one eye and the land of the blind of creative people. And it's like, maybe in, you know, in the engineering world, you're like short one eye, but in the world of creativity, you're like the one-eyed man in the land of the blind when it comes to order and, you know, detail and all that stuff. And you've definitely like figured out ways of using that to your advantage.
Yeah, I see those tiny little weird details. And like when I see the other people's letter, I'm like, oh, they did get it. Or, oh, they perfected it. They knocked it out. And like sometimes those are the most bothersome things when like somebody barely missed it. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at it and I get it right every time because I do miss it but a lot of times. But like being able to see it is super important to me.
Yes, absolutely. And I just did an episode about order and chaos. And part of the inspiration for that was that I'd visited Sesame Street and they told me something that I never knew about Jim Henson and all the Muppets, that all of the Muppets fit in either order or chaos. You're either an order Muppet or a chaos Ooh. Muppet. So you're an order Muppet like Bert or you're a chaos Muppet like Ernie. I'm definitely a chaos Muppet, and it sounds like you're a bit of an order Muppet.
I guess that's good. I'm okay being.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
Like there's some chaos. There's some chaotic parts, but yeah, I think overall I'm probably ready. The order's there. I need that. Yeah. When it comes to letters, I'm like, it should be like this. And so it's cool because it gives me something to try to achieve, like to strive for, because I'm always trying to create something that feels perfect. You know, of course, perfection is something that we never really achieve, something we just continue to work towards. It always gives me that like want to get there, to like continue pushing pieces so they are technically sound or as sound as possible. Don't do that.
What was that?
People don't do that, or they don't care about that. And that's fine. It's just for me, that's what I have to.
Yeah, that's the opposite of me. When I approach lettering, I'm thinking none of those things. That's for sure. I'm thinking a whole mess of other things. I actually probably am often thinking like, how does this feel human? Like that's the one thing I'm thinking about. Oh, and I would rather, you know, sometimes like, a bit of scrawled text, like just like handwriting to me is like, oh man, that's like the tastiest lettering. And I can't always achieve it. I definitely feel like I have a totally different approach.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lettering style that I kind of do sometimes. I do it a lot in Paint where I actually draw the letters from the outside. So it's very like childish bubble letters, but they're not bubble. They're like very rigid line. Mm. But it's great because the form is never perfect, right? Like I can't get everything to look exactly like everything else. So it's like my way to mix up stuff. I felt like forever I just like had to prove that I could draw letters technically sound. And like now, every now and then I have a project. It's like, I just want to draw these weird bubble letters and like have fun. Who cares if this letter, if the two H's look alike or the E is technically sound, and I just have a little more fun with it. So I let myself go sometimes.
You just have to quiet. Yeah, you have to quiet the Bert Muppet in your mind a little bit and let Ernie frolic, right?
Be Ernie. That's what I'm going to tell myself from now on. Just be Ernie.
But, you know, don't lose your true self, all right? In the process. Hey, man, this was fantastic. I had a great time. I can't even believe we've been talking for an hour.
Yeah, time flies when you're, like, on a podcast having fun.
And you're talking about crying and talking about the Muppets.
No, I feel like we've known each other for years, Andy. Like we're just this is.
I know, man. We got to hang out. I'm glad you're coming to Columbus so we can hang, and I'll show you some. We've got good food in Columbus.
Yeah. I mean, you better have good pizza if your last name is pizza.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely show you this pizza spot. There's a place called Mikey's Late Night Diner that they got crazy. Sauces for dipping, and they also do like local collaborations. Like they do this collaboration with like a Nashville hot chicken place that's local, and they make the greatest pizza. It's got like pickles on it, and not cooked pickles. They add the pickles later. Yeah. Don't worry. I know you were freaking out for a second. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. And I'll be, hopefully we'll hang out soon.
All right. It was great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Dad! That was so good. I loved having this chat. I've been thinking about it ever since. I've been talking about it and saying, I just did this interview where we talked about this. Blah, 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 blah. So it was one of those good ones. Thank you so much, Ade, for being on the show. It was a blast to meet you. And yeah, you're going to, I have a feeling if you didn't already know about Ade, you are going to be hearing about him constantly because he's the real deal. Anyway, thank you again. Thanks for listening. If you love Creative Pep Talk and it's had an impact on your creative career, there are a few ways in which you can give back. Some of you may feel like, I'm not giving back to you. I don't, what do you need? Well, I'll tell you what I need. And I'll tell you right now, there's so many things. You can review the show on iTunes. That helps us stay visible on iTunes. It's really helpful. You can back the podcast financially at Patreon, patreon.com/creativepeptalk. That means you'll be like one of the producers of the show. like that's selling it to you. Like you're like, I could be a producer? But honestly, the Patreon backers, they make it possible for me to spend the kind of time that I do every week on this show. So thank you, Patreon backers. And if you want to be one of those people, go. And if you back $2 an episode, you get access to weirder, shorter, stranger, mini pep talks called the Peppy Talks, of course. And yeah, they're usually me talking more about fresh things that I'm going through right now. So anyway, you might be into that. Or you might be like, I've had enough of you. Your choice. Or you can get some Creative Pep Talk merch. We got some new jazz hitting the store. We got some posters. If I don't sell them out at Icon, they're big stinking posters. They're my biggest Creative Pep Talk posters I've done. They're 18 by 24. They are last episode's artwork. It's Say Yes to the Call. You know, hero's journey jazz, as I like to do. Go check it out. And some new stickers on the way too. So creativepeptalk.com/shop. Also, you can get access to the first 100 episodes of the show and stay up to date when new shows arrive by signing up to the newsletter at creativepeptalk.com. All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for listening to all that crap. Massive thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh and the band Metavari for all our other tunes. Massive shout out to my man, Alex Suggy Buggy. I don't think he likes that I call him that, but his name's really Alex Sugg. For editing the podcast so beautifully and adding some of his other tunes as well. We love you, buddy. Thanks to Sophie. Even though she doesn't listen to the podcast. Can you imagine my wife wanting to hear more of my thoughts? Do you know that I talk like this every single day of my life? Just blah, 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 blah. If she listened to the show, I would try to get her some help for a problem that she has. Believe me, she does not need more pep. But thanks to Sophie Miller for, making this all happen. She's been a big part of the team, more and more every year. And, you know, I wouldn't have products in my shop, if it wasn't for her. And, you know, she's been a sounding board for everything that I do. And I love you, Sophie. Anyway, there you go. Thanks for listening to another episode of Creative Pep Talk. Next week, we are starting a new series, and it is a doozy, and I am pumped out of my mind to bring it to you. I'm so pumped that I can't shut up right now and just end the episode because I just want to hype it. Andy, let me give you a little pep talk real quick. Don't overhype stuff. Look, but it's going to be good. Look, we know it's going to be good. It's going to be great. Like, it's going to be fine. People are going to be, the people that like the show will probably like it. You don't have to sell it to them. Yeah, but I really want him to know that I'm excited about it. Andy, settle down. Anyway, that's me having a chat with myself, but just wait for next week. Got some good gravy. Gonna hit the audio waves on iTunes. All right, it's time to close this out before I embarrass myself any further. Thank you guys for listening to the show. And until we speak again, stay pepped up. Thank you.